This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 103. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-8816-7691.
And you can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
Welcome back, Berners. You were missed last week. The show wasn't quite the same without you. So have you got your sick note ready? Where were you?
I was hot dogging it in the United States of America. Hot dogging my donuts.
I don't even know what that involves. But you were. Anyway, we've got some great stuff coming up on the show, so we better stop nattering. We've got Gary Palmer is back on the show after a little bit of a layoff. He's got some interesting and forthright views, as always, on coaching batting and batting technique. We catch up with Pete Johnston, the Irish analyst, who gives us his view of the first two Irish games, especially that second one against England. And, of course, we've got Lee Lowry, our Australian correspondent, who gives us the Australian view of fielding and sledging and generally keeping the enthusiasm up in the field, especially when the opposition are 0 for 100, as he would probably say.
0 for 100, I like it.
And, of course, we've got your questions. And the competition is back this week, so listen out to see if your question is being asked and to find out if you're a winner. Don't forget, you can email in your questions to mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. So listen out for the questions this week, and if you're not lucky enough to win, then get in touch with us or drop us a question, and we'll see if we can get you one of our Pitch Vision Academy online coaching courses. In this next portion of the show, we're going to be talking to Gary Palmer. Gary's CCM Academy is world renowned for producing high quality cricketers with excellent techniques. And Gary is also the batting coach of Pitch Vision Academy, our online coaching academy. Gary, today we're going to be talking a little bit about batting technique and specifically your ABC method. So for those who aren't in the know, can you tell us a little bit about the ABC method of batting coaching?
Hi, David. I just think ABC is a nice way of making things really, really simple. And from a coach's perspective, the key is to make it very simple for the person you're coaching to understand what you're doing. And also, if you're trying to pass on your messages about coaching in a coach-ed environment to other coaches. So if we talk about ABCs, A being alignment, so alignment of your feet, shoulders, back path, so on. Balance, your head above your body, not tipping over to the offside. And C, completion of shot. So when I'm coaching somebody, I'm constantly looking at these three letters, A, B, C. And within each of the letters, I'll sort of work on the intricacies of technique to try and make sure that, you know, alignment is sorted out, or balance is sorted out, or completion of shot is enhanced. I just think it's a very, very, very simple way of looking at it. And if you're coaching somebody, there's no point them batting and playing bad shots and you're not saying anything to them. You really do need to sort of step in if you have the knowledge, and try and correct them to make an instant change and to make their performance better.
So give us an example of somebody who had, say, poor alignment. What might that look like?
That might look like when the ball is pitched on middle stump and they're stepping forward to play a straight drive, the front foot would go across the line of the back foot as that person steps forward. Therefore, they will be blocked off because their alignment isn't correct. And also, their balance now won't be correct. So straight away, you'd look to fix the alignment by getting the feet level, and then the balance would automatically be fixed at the same time. most top players will be very well aligned and balanced. And the really great players that are very consistent and that high up the order will have a better completion of shot than Mr. Average, i.e. they'll keep that left elbow higher for longer, so the blade of the bat goes through the line of the ball for longer. And if you've got a good completion, you've got a bigger hitting zone, you're getting good contact on the ball all the time. Yeah, and it's a really, really important thing to be working at. And players and coaches should be working at these three things constantly when they're grooving or practicing against a bowling machine in the nets. I mean, alignment is to do with direction. Balance is to do with controlling the shot. Completion is to get good contact and enhancing the hitting zone.
I'm joined on the line now by a jubilant and slightly hoarse Pete Johnson, analyst of the Irish cricket team. It's been a spectacular result for Ireland recently, and we'll get to that in a moment. But we've got two games to talk about, Pete. So let's start by talking about the Bangladesh match. How did you feel about that game overall as the analyst?
I said, I think at the start, you know, we had a very good chance, and I felt our team we had the right ingredients to win the game. But I did say that, you know, in playing in front of such a partisan crowd could have a factor, and I think it probably did in some circumstances. Perhaps nerves did play a part. I think some guys got energized by the crowd, and maybe other guys not so much. So I think it was there to win for us. You know, got them out for 200, and then looked like we were going to chase it. And it was our game to win, really, and we managed to lose it, which was quite disappointing.
And what do you put that down? Do you put that down to being nervous in the face of a potentially big victory?
Yeah, we put a lot of emphasis on winning that first game, and I think there was, you know, perhaps the first game in the World Cup for some guys, the first game of the World Cup for everyone in front of such a big crowd, and I think there was a lot of tension and nerves sort of in the dressing rooms. Guys were waiting to go in and bat, you could kind of sense it, and you know, I think we probably didn't play to our potential as batters, and we maybe didn't back ourselves enough to go out and bat and play free from ball one. And, you know, credit to them as well, they got back in it. You know, one thing we wanted to do was silence the crowd, and for large periods in that game we did that, with good partnerships.
I read an article from Michael Caulfield of Sporting Edge, who's done some work with Ireland, who said that the next game against England, part of the reason, or a big part of the reason, was that it was a well-executed plan that had been a long time coming. How much do you think the victory over England was sort of the conclusion of a plan that had been coming together, you know, for years, and how much was it that the players learned from the mistakes they made in the first game and adapted into the second game?
I think we did learn from the mistakes. We had a good review after it. Like, a lot of things went right in the Bangladesh game. I thought, you know, we took pace off the ball, bowled very well. George Dockrell hit the right lengths he needed to in Dhaka. This game, yeah, I think definitely, you know, we saw it in one of the warm-up games where we nearly chased 300 against New Zealand. I think the team now for a long time has had their eye on this World Cup and been working hard towards it. And it's great that we're here and we're peaking fielding wise, we're peaking fitness wise, we're peaking at our skills as well. And yeah, it has been a plan in the making. Obviously, in the 2020 in the Caribbean, we kept them to 120, which is the lowest score any side kept them to. Obviously, England, the eventual winners. So you know, we've been up there and competing now for a few years. since the World Cup, particularly the last couple of years. And I certainly had a very good feeling before the game, and you know, I felt that this time around it might be our day. And it might not look so good for us at times, but there was times we were out of the game and we clawed our way back in, which was great. And then when the game was there to win, we didn't throw it away this time. We went out and saw it home in the correct fashion, which was probably the most pleasing thing.
That was a standout thing for me, for a lot of commentators, I think, was the fact that the big hitting got you back into the game, but at the end, when it didn't really need big hitting anymore, it just needed a calm head and to put away the odd boundary and just keep working the ball around. That's when sort of the maturity of the side almost came through, because you know, the people who were out in the middle didn't try and keep smashing it. They did well. So how do you as a batsman when you're out in the middle, how do you sort of control that adrenaline and stop thinking, right, I'm going to start smashing it now, and start thinking, okay, I'm going to play sensibly, I know what I need to do to get to the line?
Yeah, we said playing the situation is a big thing, and I think the way that Kev and Alex batted in that partnership, you know, Cusey played his game, Kev played his. I think that's a big part of his playing to your strengths. So you don't want to play a shot that you're not 100% about playing. So all those shots Kev has practiced thousands of times. And if it's in his area and the wicket was pretty flat, you know, he's 100% that he can hit it for six. But what you don't want to see is a guy playing a shot that's out of his comfort zone, perhaps. And maybe that's when pressure has an effect on a player. So very much about knowing your strengths. I mean, some cricketers might only have two or three shots that they've made a career out of. So once you know your strengths and you back yourself to hit the balls in your area, then you know, I think that's, especially in one day cricket, that's an important thing, because in 2020 obviously you've got to improvise a lot more, but in one day cricket you've still got a lot of time. And I think that was the word for the day yesterday, was time. Phil Simmons said it in his talk at the start, and the word for the day was time. And I think it really did, it proved valuable. And just having 100% belief, going out there with confidence. I felt this time around there was a lot more positive talk from the dressing room. And certainly from my side, I tried to point out where we were in the game. So at one stage we were 161 for five, where England had been 171 for two. So I said, look, guys, there's only 10 runs in this. And then obviously we got right up there with them around the 200 mark. And just kept talking and saying, look, just, you know, reassuring guys like that they had the capability to go out, be positive from ball one and play to your strengths. And, you know, you've practiced and worked hard enough to go out and just show what you can do, really, I think.
Oh, well, I said this to you before we started talking, that I think if I would want any team to beat England, which I don't, but if I would want any team to beat England, it would be Ireland, because you know, you see the Irish team doing so many good things and having so few opportunities at this level. So it's fantastic to have a successful Irish team, even if it's at the expense of England.
It's good. I was speaking to Andy Flair this morning as well, and he realised what a big thing for Irish cricket it was, and it is absolutely massive back home. Like the amount of emails and Facebook or whatever, everyone involved in the team, it's just been ridiculous, the amount of support. But it's front page, back page of the Irish papers, it's on the news. The Taoiseach came on and spoke about the team and how they made the impossible possible, and you know, how it can lift the spirits of Irish people in times of recession. And it really is a, you know, I believe it's going to change Irish cricket forever.
So it's the triumphant return of the question section this week. And Berners, you've picked out a couple of interesting questions for us to discuss, have you?
Yeah, I have. We've got young Damien Bryan here. He's in a bit of a conundrum. He's a 14-year-old off-spinner, and he's got two different coaches talking into each ear, it sounds like. He's got one telling him to bowl it nice and flat and dart it in, whilst the other one wants it up in the air and is telling him to give it a bit of flight. So he's just wondering which one to kind of listen to, really. So I guess he's in a nice conundrum there of having two coaches.
Yeah, it is a bit of a problem for players who are getting different advice from different corners. What's your school of thought, Berners? Are you a toss it up and give it a tweak guy, or are you more of a yardy style fire it in at the legs?
I think you do a bit of both, don't you? It depends on what the kind of scenario is and what the score is, what the player's trying to do. If he's if you're on top of the game situation, I'd say flight it up, you know, because it's a lot harder to play against something when you're waiting for it to come, and your judgment and the risk factor of playing like an attacking shot against something flighted is far greater than something that's flighted in and got a bit of pace on the ball, because you can get away with a few kind of mistakes then, can't you? Because you literally use the pace of the ball, so to speak.
Yeah, ideally, a bit of both would be perfect. We don't always exist in the ideal world, so my advice to any young spinner who is thinking about, you know, what style should I adopt, is the default position should be able to give it a big tweak, because, you know, if you can get it above the eye line and you can get the ball zipping through the air, spinning hard, then it's going to dip, you know, you're going to get some flight on it, and it's going to turn off the pitch when there is any turn. So that would be the default position. But then, you know, there are a lot of bowlers who have success, especially in the one day game in the short format, who don't turn it much. You know, you only have to look at Yardie. He's an average county batsman who's made a success of himself as a 2020 and one day bowler who basically bowls slow medium. barely turns it.
So, I think also another consideration, he's only 14, so to be able to flight it up and get some control at that age is quite critical as well, because anyone can in theory just run in and bowl darts. It's being able to hold the ball back and being able to control that flight, which is a real skill. So I think he should develop those skills, and then always, you know, if he can do that, he's always going to be able to flight it in and, you know, increase his arm speed. That's not going to be a big issue.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say go with trying to spin it. If you feel that really genuinely isn't your style and you're never going to be able to do that, then okay, you know, go with the darts instead. But whichever one you choose, and you can see where my bias is and where Berners' bias is as well, whichever one you choose, you can be successful at that method by practicing as hard as you can and getting in the nets and bowling at a target and keep giving the ball a rip over and over again. You know, if you're 14, probably maybe you want to start bowling from 18 yards without a run-up and just bowl at a target for a while until you get that accurate, and then move yourself a yard back and keep going back. And again, at 14, you probably want to be bowling, you know, on average between 6 and 8 overs on your own in the nets every week. That's not enough to tie your arm out, but it's enough to, you know, get your accuracy up. And if you're doing that, hitting 5 balls out of 6 on target, then go back to 22 yards and start bowling from there. It's a long road. It's not easy. But if you go with the philosophy of, I'm just going to keep trying until I do it, then you can't go far wrong.
Sweet.
What's the next question, Berners?
Okay, next question. Mohammed Adil Sabi from Pakistan. He's questioning how a batsman plays the good length ball. He says he finds a lot of information and articles around bowlers bowling good length balls and how to do that, but how does the poor old batsman play these balls when the bowler starts getting it right? And I think I need a bit of help with this one as well, actually, because I struggle against those balls. They're normally the good ones.
Well, they are, and of course it really all boils down to what's going on in the game. If you're opening the batting in a test match, then you're going to play slightly differently if you're in the last over of a 2020 match. So that is a question where it depends. I mean, the default position when it comes to playing a good length ball is to play it on its merits. If it's a slowish pitch, then you probably want to be getting forward. If it's maybe a slightly quicker pitch, then, you know, you might you might play back to a good length ball, but the principle stays the same. You get in line with it, you keep your elbow high, and you block it.
Yeah, you either block it or you leave it, don't you? So that kind of decision making process is pretty fundamental to a good length ball, because if it's a good length ball and on your stumps, you've got to get a bit of bat on it, and if it's not, then just leave it alone.
Absolutely, and if we're talking about leaving it alone, there's quite an easy way. If you're setting up correctly, there's quite an easy way to know whether to leave it or not, because a lot of people struggle with that judgment. But if you're setting up correctly and your head is over the off stump when the ball's coming down, as it should be, then it's easy to know whether to leave it or not. If the ball is to the off side of your head, then you know it's not going to hit the stump, so you can safely leave it. If it's coming in line with your head, you know it's going to be hitting the off stump, so you're going to have to get something on it.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it all changes when you're hitting out at the end. You know, a length ball suddenly becomes a ball that you can hit because you can swing at it, and you can play it in that baseball style that we were talking about earlier, where you're using your bottom hand and slugging it somewhere between mid on and square leg. Or you can be a little bit more orthodox. You can set yourself back in the crease a little bit more, maybe go back in a cross, drop your weight down a little bit and play with a straight bat and hit the ball straight back through, you know, through the V, over the bowler's head, between mid on and mid off. That's a little bit less risky because you're playing a more orthodox cricket shot, and also you're relying on timing rather than power to get the ball to the boundary, which, especially if you're not a powerful batsman or your hand-eye coordination isn't quite as good as it should be, then that's probably a better option to take, to try and hit the ball as straight as you possibly can, because you can always hit it over the fielders, whereas if you're trying to swipe across it, you have to get everything perfect and you may end up looking a bit silly if it knocks your off stump back.
Very silly.
If you're just talking about batting in a, you know, in a club game, in a 50-over club game, then and someone bowls you a good length ball, then block it and wait for the next one, because there are not many club bowlers who bowl six balls on the spot every over.
Very true. Patience is of the essence, dear boy.
Okay, so it's time we caught up with Lee Lowry, our cricketer down under. And this week we're going to be talking a little bit about fielding attitudes and how they differ from country to country. So, Lee, what's your experience with the attitude towards fielding in the team that you play in?
Yeah, well, it's a big thing, actually. Something which, being a captain myself, I put a tremendous amount of value on, and every Friday night before a game, I've got this little whiteboard that I write up what I want to happen and attitudes, I suppose, before the game, so everyone can have a read through and see what they need to try and achieve, and sort of self-motivated that way. So it's something that, even in my later age, being 32, I still really enjoy. I just love fielding, so that side of it comes pretty easy, and if I can pass as much on to the group coming through, well then, yeah, that's great, because it's just something which is so big and so important in today's cricket, especially with the shorter formats.
And how does that show itself in the field when it comes to fielding attitude? People talk about a lot nowadays, they talk about a lot about energy and you know, fielding as a team and making the batsmen feel like they're surrounded. So, and that really all boils down to the energy of the team. So how does that, how do you find the energy of the team when you're in the field?
Yeah, it's probably something which, no matter what level you're playing or what country you're playing in, there's probably a lot of similarities that that go with them. And obviously, if you're taking wickets and you're on a roll, well, then the team's up and about. If partnerships are starting to build, obviously people start dropping off. So we really make a big point of trying to stay up in those tough stretches. And that was one point that I had on my whiteboard for Friday, and going to the last match, and we must stay together as a bowling group and fielding group when that partnership arises, because you're going to get a time where you might be on a roll of taking three or four wickets, but There's going to be that stage where, you know, teams either attack themselves and score or actually just face a few overs out.
Speaking as a keeper, I find that the keeper is crucial. The attitude of the keeper is crucial to the attitude of the fielding side. Not so much when it comes to sledging, although, you know, the odd word is probably all right. But in terms of keeping the energy and the enthusiasm of the team up, the keeper has to kind of be a bit of sometimes they use the word sergeant major, sometimes they say he's the leader of the fielding unit. The point is, I think he has to be a little bit of a psychologist. He has to keep his eye on players. If he sees heads going down, he needs to know how to deal with someone who's getting a bit fed up and be able to make sure that the captain is aware of what's going on as well. So, you know, I see him sort of as the hub of the fielding unit. What's your keeper like in your team? Does he operate in that way?
He's one of the better guys energy-wise, which will keep guys in the field. He recognises, you know, stages we were talking about before where we need to be up as a team and get through a tough period. And, you know, one of the big things that he was good at was just making the other guys aware that it's not as bad the situation you're in than you might think. You grab a couple of wickets and you're back in the game again, and you know, you're exposing, say, a middle order that a couple of guys new to the crease, and all of a sudden the wicket's looking like it's a lot harder to bat on than what it has been for the previous two guys. Yeah, you notice a difference when you've got a young fella coming up from the thirds into the seconds and a bit quieter than normal, doesn't know his game as well. It's funny you bring up this sort of energy of the keeper. I was sort of doing some slip catches previous to the game, and had him next to me just off the little ramp boards that we throw these catches off, and he dropped a couple just in the practice warm up there, and you could just sort of tell that he was going to take that out of the game, out onto the ground, and he managed to drop a couple of catches. Yeah, you have to really keep your energy up and make sure that you're, as you say, the hub of the fielding unit, because you're generally the go-to guy a lot of the time where the captain needs any help. I think you're the captain of the seconds in your team, aren't you, when you're playing in the twos?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it's that's quite hard to juggle that. You kind of have to have two hats on almost. You know, you have to be captain up until the bowler starts his run-up, and then you have to stop being captain until the ball's been bowled. And then you have to start being captain again. So that can
That's right, yeah. No, that's where it's an easy way to sort of use the keeper as a guy you can bounce ideas off, and you know, even little things like angles in the field, just checking things with him that way. So yeah, to have your captain being your wicket keeper it's a big job, yeah, that's for sure.
Especially as keeper, when you drop a catch, it's very hard to then turn around and start saying to people, come on, buck up your ideas, you know, if we get a couple of wickets here, when you've just missed a stumping or you put a catch down. So yeah, it's been difficult being captain, but I think
that next little period, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But it's difficult just for the keeper generally, because if he makes a mistake, then first of all, you can't hide from a wicket-keeping mistake, and second of all, then you've got to get up from that mistake and start motivating people straight away again, because if you're flat, it's not going to take long before the whole rest of the team is flat. You know, especially if the bowler's head goes down because you've dropped a catch, you know, you've got to go up to him at the end of the over and say, oh, you know, I'll make sure the next one's an absolute doozy. So, you know, you've really got to show them that, you know, that's gone, and don't worry, we need to pick it up for the next over. So yeah, that can be difficult sometimes. You've almost got to fake it sometimes. You know, especially for younger keepers, what you find is they come out with all the energy, all the sledging, and then they make a mistake and it dissipates. But with a more experienced keeper, you keep it a bit more low. You don't start high and dip down. You maybe start a little bit lower. You keep it bubbling, and then if it does dip when you make a mistake, then you can. You know, it doesn't dip that much, so you can keep it on a nice even keel all the way through the innings. You know, that can be hard something when the opposition are 150 for none, and you're saying, come on, any minute now we'll get two. You know, one brings two is our thing. Our big thing that we take the mickey out of each other almost for is bang bang. You know, this is quite a new phrase that's popped up in the last couple of years. when you're talking about, you know, one wicket brings two wickets, and, you know, trying to take wickets in clumps almost.
Yeah.
You know, the shout that comes out if the opposition are getting a little stand is, come on, boys, we can get through this. Bang, 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 bang. In other words, we'll take two quick wickets. And
that's right. Yeah, now for me with that one, that's something I've heard a few times for sure. Yeah, you see.
But it's almost a joke now. You know, it's almost become a joke. You know, you start because one person says bang bang, someone else says boom boom, and then suddenly, you know, it's all it lifts up the whole field because you're having a laugh with it. You know, it's not. You know, suddenly it doesn't matter that they're 150 for none because you think, well, it's all right because we're having a bit of a laugh anyway. And that, I think that's the key to it. You have to be. And any fielder can do this. You have to be a bit of a psychologist in the field almost and know how to raise the game of individuals and of the team as a unit.
Yeah, that's the best bit about it, isn't it? That's the part that we really enjoy, I think, as cricketers, the mateship. And one thing that we can enjoy more than anything else is that sort of, you know, as you say, sneaky, sly comments out in the field, which we might not necessarily have started out in the field. It might be something in the dressing room, but you can bring it out to the field, which energizes the rest of the boys. And then, as you say, a wildfire, then everyone else is onto it, and all of a sudden you've got some energy out of nowhere.
So that's the end of this week's show. Don't forget that you can get in touch with us with your coaching questions. You can contact us on all the usual offices, which of course is Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. We have a Facebook page, Pitch Vision Academy. Do a little search for that on Facebook and you'll find us there. Bernard, you've got the email address and the phone number?
Yeah, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com or give us a call on 020-88-167-691.
That is an answer phone, so don't fear. There's nobody going to pick up the phone and start asking what you want. You can just leave a message, and if you're any good, we may get back to you and have a little chat with you. If not, that's fine. We can just use your question on the show, and the best question always wins a prize, and that prize is some free cricket coaching courtesy of the Pitch Vision Academy courses section, which is in my opinion the finest online coaching on the internet. But then I would say that, wouldn't I? It's in my interest, but they are very good, and you can get one for free even if you don't believe me. So Berners, this week's show we had a couple of questions. Who would you like to see get the free online coaching course with Pitch Vision Academy this week?
I think we should go Mohammed Adil Sabith, just for the fact that I've never seen a Pakistani player actually block or leave the ball off of a good length. So let's hope he applies the golden rules that you mentioned and can take things forward.
Ignoring the low-level racism there, we hope that it'll make up for a free coaching course, will make up for it somewhat. So congratulations.
I'm sure Shahid Afridi will agree with me.
Well, and also, of course, it's a batsman's game. So by default, we always have to give the prize to the batsman unless the bowler question is at least three times as good, right?
Exactly.
That's all we've got time for this week. We'll be back next week with another information-packed show and hopefully a little bit of entertainment on the way. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.